Okay, I started off letting you know that you're not going to like the sermon, so I'm going to bribe you that you'll at least like it a little bit with some M&Ms. So we can pass these around, and what I want you to do, you can take, just as long as enough for everybody, you can take, you know, three or four and pass it, but keep one. Don't eat one of them. You got to hang on to, okay, for something later. So take three or four, pass it around. When it gets to the end of the aisle, if there's more left, pass them back around, all right? There's lots of M&Ms. Even if you don't like M&Ms, go ahead and at least take one and hold on to it, okay? Oh, you want some? It's coming around. Have a seat. He's going to hand it to you. Okay, so you're liking the sermon so far? Okay. All righty. Well, you know, we're in the middle of a series called Glad You Asked. And, you know, this is a series where we got questions from you guys about things you wanted us to discuss. And I drew the short straw. No, actually, I volunteered to teach this lesson today, but no one else wanted it. And it's because it's about money. And we don't like to talk about money. That's one of those subjects you don't really, it's not polite to talk about. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. Well, here it is on the screen, if you don't have it on your laptop, on your Bible or your phone. Let's read this together, okay? Just go ahead and read it off the screen so we're all saying the same words in the same spot. Here we go. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. That's a very familiar passage to Christians. And we know it. Most of us could quote part of that by memory. So today we're going to be talking about money. But more importantly, before we get to that, there's two important values we got to get out there, because everything we talk about has to be rooted in these two things. Okay? In fact, everything we do and say as Christians have to be rooted in these two things, even when it comes to money, all right? And, of course, we find that what we call the greatest commands. When Jesus was asked, you know, what do I need to do? Here's what he replied. Love the Lord your God with all your, and with all your, and with all your, and with all your, and love the your neighbor as yourself. And you know, in Luke, right after that, the guy says what? Who's my neighbor? And Jesus tells a parable of the Good Samaritan, probably the most famous parable that Jesus told. It's famous today. And in the parable, we see that the Samaritan is the one who stopped and helped the Israelite. And they were different as day and night, right? They were different cultures, different religious beliefs. There were prejudice, and he is the one who was the good neighbor. So I'm going to say neighbor a lot today. When I say neighbor, I don't want you to just think about your next door neighbor. I want you to think about everybody. Our neighbor is all people. All people in Memphis, all people in China, all people in Africa, all people. We are called by Christians to do two things at the foundation of everything else. Love God and love people. All right, we got that established. We need to hang on to that as we go forward. So this counts even when it comes to how we handle our money. Now, at Cordova, largely because of Gary's teaching, We have learned to be a very giving church, a very generous church. They say that a church's personality eventually lines up with the minister's personality. That's why Cordova is known as one of the reasons why we're known as a generous church. I feel sorry for the future. I have no idea what your personality is going to look like later. And so, real basic, there's three things we need to do with our money. We need to spend, we need to save, and we need to give, right? And I know I've been in some of your homes, if you have kids, you have jars similar to this. And you teach your kids, okay, we're going to put 10% into giving, we're going to put 10% into saving, and then we're going to have a spending jar where you can spend and buy things you want. That is great training. The problem with this picture is it's backwards. And they have spending first. It should be give, save, and spend. Those are the priorities. We don't need to talk about giving today. This is a generous church, so we're going to skip over that part, okay? Savings. A lot of us, we're not really saving anything on purpose right now, but a lot of us have been through Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. We know the importance of saving, right? It comes after giving, but it's still very important to take care of our families. But we're not going to talk about that today either. We're going to talk about spending. We're going to ask the question, how should faith impact my spending? We know how faith should impact our giving. We know how faith should impact our saving. But how should faith impact how we give? I think there's, when it comes to spending, I think there's two big issues that we see. The first one is personal materialism. And the second one is global consumerism. Personal materialism and global consumerism. All right, let's talk about those. So in personal materialism. What is materialism? Materialism is the excessive desire to acquire. The excessive desire to acquire things that we need, and buy more than what we need, right? We can't have enough of that thing that we need. And it's excessive desire to acquire things that we don't need. And we live in a place where we are inundated every day with materialism temptations, right? I mean, think about how many hundreds, maybe thousands, every day of little things that come our way saying, buy this, this will make you happy, this is better. Billboards, pop-up ads all through blogs and internet stuff we're doing. It's everywhere. When you Google something, there are ads that pop up at the top, right? It's everywhere. It's such a temptation for us to have this desire to acquire. Where does this even come from, this desire? I think for us, it could be our social status, right? The more we have, the more successful we are. It's about how people perceive us to be. Keeping up with the Joneses. I think also, when you look at it, it comes to more than that. It's a perception that my happiness will increase as my possessions increase. My happiness will increase when I buy, when I spend, when I accumulate. That's why we do it. But at the core of that, even going a little bit deeper, at the bottom of it, comes this greed. We want more. Greed. Now, greed is one of those sins. This is one of those seven deadly sins. It's a serious sin. But you'll hear people confess usually, you know, I'm sorry I lied. I'm sorry I stole that. I'm sorry I disrespected you. I'm sorry. Hardly ever do you hear someone say, please pray for me, I'm greedy. You don't hear that. But greed is at the bottom of it. And at the bottom of greed, let's go a little bit deeper, okay? So first we have the perception. Why we do this, why are we materialistic? Because we want happiness. We have this desire to acquire. We think we need these things a little bit deeper. We have, you know, we think we can be happier if we have those things, get a little bit deeper. And we see there's a greed. And then at the bottom level is a lack of trust in God. That's really the root cause of materialism. Lack of trust in God to provide for you what you need, what I need. That's really what it comes down to. Jesus said this in Luke 12:15. Watch out. Be on guard, Americans, against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. This is not what life is about. It was never meant to be about this. One more verse. Because money, we're going to talk about money, but money is really not the problem. All right? It's the love of money that is the problem. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many gifts. Griefs. That's a gifts? Griefs. We'd rather have gifts, wouldn't we? Hundreds of times, thousands maybe, we're inundated with these messages. Bigger, better, bulk. You want to upsize that? You want to supersize that? It's better. It's bigger. More is better, right? Buy in bulk. It's bigger. It's better. Rarely do we ask in these moments when we are pulling out our wallet, how is my spending showing that I love God? And how is my spending showing that I love my neighbor? Do we do that? We do it when it comes to our giving, right? We're thinking, I love God. I love people. I'm going to give. I think when our savings, I think it's easy to think, I love God. I love my family. I love people. I'm going to save. But when it comes to spending, we rarely ask those two questions. And those are the most fundamental things about being a Christian. Loving God and loving our neighbor. But I don't even want to talk about personal materialism today. I want to talk about the second big problem. And that is global consumerism. We live in a global economy like never before. We are so well connected to the whole rest of the world. We know when an earthquake happens in Nepal the same day it happens, right? We hear about earthquakes and tsunamis in the Philippines. We hear about this immediately. We are so well connected through the media, through the news. We are connected through our travel. We're connected to the world because of immigration. I mean, Brother Hadayah is here from Pakistan. We now have a connection, a personal connection to Pakistan. There are immigrants all over the country, and they're growing in numbers from all different places of the world. We have a deeper global relationship with the world and a global economy. There's nothing wrong with this. In fact, I think it's good. Nothing wrong with a global economy. Nothing wrong with global consumerism. That's not the evil part. Money's not the problem. It's what? The love of money. It's the greed that gets in the way. We live in international independence. International independence. You want me to prove it? Okay. Let's say China shuts down every single factory in their country. You go to the store a week or two later, and what's on the shelf? Nothing. There's nothing there. We're dependent on people in different countries. And you can argue about that, but I don't think that's evil, okay? I'm not saying it's great or it's ideal, but it's not evil. So I want to demonstrate our connection to the rest of the world, and I need six volunteers, and you're going to ask you to come up here and stand on stage. So I need six volunteers. Mark, I'm going to choose you this time, buddy. Grayson, Alicia, I'll call on you in a minute, okay? Let's see. Ethan, how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, okay? Actually, no, Josiah, stay there. Yeah, who are you, Josh? Come on up. Let's go up on stage. All right, I want to arrange yourself, the smallest one on this side, the largest on this side. Mark, I think you confused me. Got a little confused there. Okay. All right, this is going to represent what we call a supply chain, okay? So we're going to start at this end. Let's say Alicia is a coffee farmer in Guatemala, okay? So Alicia has a little family farm, and she's struggling to make ends meet, right? But she has coffee beans on her estate, in her yard. So she is raising coffee, okay? Next is, Noah. Let's say Noah is the inspector. He's the one who comes and inspects the coffee beans to make sure they're good quality, right? And next we have, let's say, we'll call Joshua the shipping magnate. He's the shipper. He's one who's going to export to a different country or wherever it's going. And then we have Mark, the importer, right? He's going to intake it. It's going to be at the dock there. He's got to oversee all the goods to come in. And Ethan is going to be our manufacturer. He's the factory. He's going to do something with the beans or whatever it is we're producing. He's going to maybe roast them. He's going to package them, right? And then we have Grayson, who is the retailer. He is the Starbucks. He's the store, whatever store that is, that sells the coffee, right? There's nothing wrong with this system. Nothing wrong with it. But it does have an inherent price to it, right? Because the coffee beans on this end cost nothing, basically, right? She makes very little. And each time we get deeper in the supply chain, the price does what? It goes up and up and up. Nothing wrong with that. That's the price of doing business. Nothing wrong with any of these people making a profit. They all need to take care of their families. Profits are not bad. Okay? God wants us to make a profit. He wants us to be profitable and take care of our families, take care of the kingdom, take care of our world. The problem comes in at that bottom level. There's a lack of trust in God. When there's a lack of trust in God, there is greed. And when greed creeps in, let's say it creeps in at Grayson's level. We'll call him coffee shop, okay? Coffee shop, he's trying to run a business, and he's barely scraping by, and he would like to make more money. So what does he do? He either charges more money to the consumer, which could really cut down on his business if his coffee prices go up to the consumer, or he starts saying to you, I need cheaper coffee, or you're going to lose my business. And who are you? You're the manufacturer, or he's the roaster. So he says, well, I can't cut costs. I refuse to cut costs. I refuse to cut my profit. So you must lower your costs of importing. You must lower your prices in exporting. You must lower your prices. And it comes down to our little poor coffee farmer. It always comes back to Juan Valdez. Who has the least margin to cut costs? Our poor farmer, who's barely, not even maybe making a living wage. So who has the most power? The biggest one on that end. They control the power, but not really. I need Ken to come up here and stand beside Grayson. Oh, you are? I need somebody taller than, how about Charles? Are you taller? Get up here and stand by Grayson. Is he taller? Wow. I don't know. Stay on your toes, Charles. Stay on your toes. Squat down. There you go. There you go. Ruined my illustration. Who has the real power here is the consumer. It's his demands that are most important in this supply chain. Because if he wants, if the coffee shop wants his business, he's got to cater to him. Otherwise, he'll go somewhere else. So he has to keep his prices low. He has to demand that all the way down so that he can retain this customer. So the customer is the one with most of the power in the supply chain. It doesn't feel that way. Y'all can have a seat. Thank you. This is an oversimplification, of course, of something that's very complex. The consumer has the circumstances. No matter